Welcome to the Transmedia Podcast, brought to you by Conductor's Crisis Simulator, the fastest way to build interactive team-based exercises. With Crisis Simulator, trainees feel like the exercise is relevant and the interaction ensures they're massively engaged, meaning you don't have people in class looking at Facebook or checking their BlackBerry. If you can use Excel, then you can create interactive experiences that feel like real life, and you're free to sell any sims you create to other Crisis Simulator customers. Why not try it for free now and go to crisis.conductor.com. That's crisis.conductor, conductr.com.
Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. Today we'd like to share with you Juliana Rufus' presentation about her first interactive journalism experience, Pirate Fishing. And don't forget to check her new interactive investigation about the Syrian cyber war called Hacked at syhacked.com. That is syhacked.com.
Okay, well, hi everybody. I think I've got a really difficult slot early afternoon, so I hope I can make it interesting and to keep you awake. What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to spoil the story and I'm going to tell you what happened first because what I want to do is focus on the process behind how we developed the interactive project because I think that's the most important thing. So I'm an investigative journalist, current affairs reporter with Al Jazeera. I specialize in making international films, not news, but travel around the world and do really anything from conflicts to investigations. And I was asked to go out to Sierra Leone and make a film about pirate fishing, basically illegal trawlers like that one who come in and fish illegally in Sierra Leonean waters and steal all the fish, therefore depriving the country from income and local fishermen from their livelihood and their food. And you've got these big South Korean trawlers that come out, fish illegally, and hide their identity. And it was an amazing shoot when we did it. We worked with a local NGO, a local and an international NGO, who gave us tip-offs and alerted us to trawler sightings. And then we went out and filmed them. And it was one of these rare occasions as a journalist where you get a full investigation, beginning, middle, and end, in 2 weeks. I mean, that never happens in life. And I now worry that I've peaked early and this will never happen again because we filmed the illegal trawlers, this one, there were two of them, then collected a lot of evidence. Here you see we photographed crew members. We took GPS readings of the location so that we could prove that the trawlers were really fishing in protected areas. And then we embarked on an investigation. We basically collected lots of photos of trawlers to see if we could identify the ones that we filmed because the names were hidden. We went into Freetown Port and photographed lots of trawlers coming in to see, again, if they would match. We interviewed whistleblowers. This is a guy obviously hiding their identity, somebody who spoke about Navy corruption and illegal fishing. Somebody from that's the Navy guy. Okay, the one before was from the Fisheries Ministry who told us about corruption in the Fisheries Ministry. And then in the end, we found the ship. We managed to match up the photos, identify the trawler, went to the Fisheries Minister, who is that gentleman, and said to him, look, we've filmed a crime in your country, and we know the people behind it. And we kind of, half of the conversation was off record. We said, we know half of the corruption is in the Fisheries Ministry, in your ministry. So this film is going out on Al Jazeera, and you can be part of the problem or the solution. And he wanted a night to think about this and then rung up the next morning and said, we absolutely must investigate this and please come into the ministry and so on. So he called in the ship and this person was really instrumental in our investigation as well. Somebody called Victor, who was from the Fisheries Ministry, really honest guy. We had him with us from the beginning. And in the beginning, he kept a really low profile because he hadn't really got official permission to go along with us. But since the minister bought into the whole project in the end, Victor became the shining hero. And this is him climbing onto the mystery trawler as we'd identified it. So that was our investigation. It was really amazing. And I was at a conference and started speaking to some other journalists because there had been a lot of web documentaries that had been talked about. And I don't know if you'd followed the web documentary developments. There were Prison Valley, which made a big splash, and Fort McMurray and so on. And we were all investigative journalists, and we felt that with investigations, we could bring something quite special to interactive TV projects. So we sort of sat down and again, critiqued everybody else, and then we were like, okay, what can we do? So what we wanted to do with the project that we were creating is firstly reveal how does an investigation actually work? What is our process as investigative journalists of evidence gathering on the ground? How do we make it stand up? Then we really did want to take investigations out of the ivory tower and open it up to younger audiences. Because what quite often happens, we do an investigation, we get it on Al Jazeera, we print it in The Guardian. We kind of talk to each other. We preach to people who are already converted. So the goal was to try and reach younger audiences, to reach the 61% of people who consume news via their social media feeds and don't buy newspapers or go on the Al Jazeera websites. And we also wanted to make it participatory because, you know, I mean, you are the experts in this room, but everybody tells me that younger audiences want to be part of the consumption process of media and don't just sit back and watch. And then personally, we had, you know, as investigative journalists, the third point is really most of, I mean, I love what I do. And there's a real buzz about it when it goes right. And it's just the sheer excitement if this, the chase is underway. So we wanted to pass that on as well. So that's what triggered the interactive project. So what happens, you come onto the website for our interactive documentary and you click that little mail icon that you saw there and you accept an assignment. You're a junior researcher, you work along with a team of senior journalists and you get asked to come along, your editor's asking you to come along on join a pirate fishing investigation and you hopefully click accept and that gets you on the way. And then I'll talk you through, this is where we tell you how to do it, I'll take you through that. And you scroll down, what you're seeing here, we've pre-recorded it, you scroll down. We tell you via the mobile phone, you get to know your team. We occasionally give you instructions on what to do next. Okay, and we play, and then you get via scroll journalism two clips. And the first clip is basically, so what we've done, we've taken the film, and I'll come back to that as well, we've got scroll journalism that takes you through the project. As you go down and then you come the clips and as you click on them, you see the story told not as a traditional documentary, but divided up in 2 to 3 minute clips. So this is where we've had a tip off.
Do you want them?
Yeah, please. We're going to an island where fishermen have said trawlers came last night and they created a lot of damage.
And when do they leave? In the morning?
Yeah, in the morning.
So they feel safe at night?
Yeah. At night they come very close to the shore.
This is cut.
Yeah. They destroyed 700. Now this balance of 100. Just 800 boats.
This is the bit that's left, yeah. And everything else is lost.
Yeah, yeah. 700 lost almost. We are fishing several times with no catch because of harassment of the trawler. You try fishing here, overfishing by the trawlers. So now we have no fishing.
So this is Amara, our local contact.
Trying to give a report on this trawler. That this morning, he saw it heading to this point. The guys are safe.
So does that mean the trawler is fishing now?
Yeah, they are pushing down there.
Illegally?
Well, I can say illegally.
You have to check.
They have to check.
Okay, so that's the clip that really sets us out on a story. I'm going to talk quick. So what happens at the end? What happens at the end of each clip? You saw, and I'll go back to that, you'll see these little cards and they actually correspond to the flashing image that you saw coming up. And basically that's an image that comes up every time we collect information. Somebody showing us destroyed nets, somebody showing us evidence of a crime and so on. So it flashes up in the video and at the end, so at the end of each clip, you get these cards. When you click on them, it tells you why it is significant. So here's, for example, damaged fishing nets. Here's a profile of the people that you meet. And then this speaks about overfishing. What you have on this side is the status bar, and you also have, and that's the most important thing, what we call an investigative notebook. So what you have to do as the user, as the player, you have to differentiate between what is criminal evidence, what are the notes for an investigation, and what's background information. And you have to decide the difference and drag and drop them into the right categories of your investigative notebook. What happens when you do that? You gain points, investigative points. You can change your status. And throughout the whole project, you can advance from a junior researcher to a senior investigative journalist. So that's the gamified evidence collection process. We also have this little icon here where you can explore the map a little bit more, watch extra clips. When you do that, it wins you badges, depending on, you get an activist badge, which you can post on Facebook, or a city explorer when we go to Freetown, or corruption investigator. And then what else is in the status bar? We give you where you are within the project. And obviously, you can share it via social media. But really, that's the main concept. That was really our thing. We gamified the information gathering process throughout with all the clips. Okay, and I'll just play you one more clip. This is as we actually find the trawlers that Amara had told us about.
This is the vicious plateau calling. This is vicious plateau calling. How do you read me? Over. Take a snapshot of any of the fishermen on board, which would be an evidence that this was the boat.
They're really pulling up the net, huh? So we can see it when it comes out?
Yeah. So they're actively fishing. We're proving that. So it's a crime in process.
They've covered up the marking, but we can still see the name quite clearly. It's the Sea Queen.
Okay, and then at the end of this, you go back to dragging and dropping into the state of bar. What we wanted to do is to have people not just to watch, but to actually be actively engaged in the project. So you scroll through the projects, you watch a number of clips, and we've divided the project up into four stages. At the end of a stage, you get into what we're calling an interactive environment. And in this case, it's a local office where you have a number of choices in how you want to proceed, what clips to watch next. And at the bottom, we give you an indication of what's the one that you really should watch. In this case, it's you need to go on the map and plot the coordinates of the trawler on the map to make sure that the GPS reading has established that the trawler was really illegally fishing in the protected areas. So we have a number, four different interactive environments. And at the end of stage one, you've advanced. And this is every time you come to the end of a stage, we congratulate you and we move you on into the story. So that's sort of the structure. And the structure, so in some ways, the gamification element, once we hit it, that was the easy bit. The thing that we were really tearing our hair out over was much earlier, and that was the structure. Because unlike other web documentaries that we'd seen on the web, and I've mentioned Prison Valley or Fort McMurray or so on, we actually wanted to stick to a linear narrative. We wanted, just in a traditional documentary, we wanted to take the viewer, the player, the user, interesting, you know, difficulty with the words, on a journey from how did we start the investigation and where did we end up. So in most web documentaries, what you see are three different ways of arranging the footage, either by map, so that you can decide where you want to visit first, by character, Gaza Sederot, for example, does that, or on a timeline. These are normally the three narrative devices to present footage. So we tried something that I haven't seen in a documentary project since, and we got into this really kind of difficult contradiction that on the one hand, we wanted to give the user freedom and to make this interactive, but on the other hand, we needed to maintain control over the narrative. And that was so difficult. We had wall charts of where can we take people next. We made another mistake. We thought creating an interactive project would be a good sort of dumping ground of all the footage that's not normally in the film, and everybody can get really behind the scenes. And we learned pretty quickly that we had to be very tight and very controlled. And this wasn't, at least not for us as creators, about freedom. And a lot of this came out in the first version that we created, which was much more sprawling and with a complicated structure. And I took that to 120 journalism students at City University, the MA course, and I did them do some user testing, and they hammered us. I mean, they had so many problems, but it was really fantastic. It was such a good reality check. They would say, why are you making it interactive when you already know the outcome? You know, this is just phony. And they gave us so much to think about. And actually, it was in response to that we came with a more gamified response to this. And also the four stages. That was our solution. You scroll through each stage. At the end of each stage, we give you freedom in the interactive environments. You can decide which clip to watch next. But we also gamify the evidence, which is more interactivity. What we also did as you go through it is we try to keep the process, the time elastic. What you can do, you can whiz through it, scroll down, go to the next stage. So if you want to spend 10 minutes on it and get a sense of where you're heading and towards the end, you can do that. If you want to immerse yourself, you can do that too. And that was a very conscious decision to keep people involved that way. We kept, after this big experience at City University, we kept doing mini user testing because in the end of the day, there was nobody around that we could learn from. We were really making it up as we went along. And the only way we could figure out whether it was working or not was by trial and error and by watching people's reactions to this. Is it working? You know, do people understand? You know, there were quite a lot of people who hadn't realized that they need to scroll down. So we needed to have a little button saying scroll down and stuff like that. And at this point, normally my colleague does the next bit. It's just a sort of a number of design examples. And that was Ivan Giordano who did the creative design. That you never just look at a background image. Every image in the film, every transition is part of the storytelling. It's never just a picture. And I hope this little assembly is playing now. So these are all the different ways we move on the story through the mobile phone, point you towards maps. That's another interactive environment. And this one is actually interesting because, I'll get you back to it, what we've done in the joint maritime committee, which is where the Sierra Leoneans monitor the boats that are in their waters as much as they can, we actually connect you with maritime surveillance websites. So you can actually go on a live website and see what ship trackers are using. So there's something which is really cool called like an AIS website. So you can focus in on a country and see every ship in real time that's currently fishing or traveling, doing anything in those waters. So in the Joint Maritime Committee, we direct you towards tools that real-life investigators would use, which is here. You can click on them, you know, monitor trawlers. You get that takes you to the real-time tools. This is where we explain how to compare between our photos and the photos of the trawlers who we think could be our mystery trawler. That's another interactive environment where you contact whistleblowers, your hotel room. So we'd seen the fisheries minister, and he said, okay, I'm going to be part of the solution. I'm going to tell the Navy to take you out to the trawler, and you can inspect it and really see if it was the one that you filmed illegally. But when we came to the meeting point with the Navy, instead of picking us up and taking us to our mystery trawler, we filmed them going off ahead of us, and we're pretty convinced that what they really wanted to do is warn the trawler to escape. So we filmed that on a mobile phone, and then and we're using this. We're doing in this project what happens in real life. I contact my editor, and I'm saying, look, we're going out. We're doing a citizen's inspection of this trawler. But if you don't hear from us by 7 o'clock this evening, you know, something will have gone wrong. So we're building these sort of, that's what you then see on the mobile phone. You see the little clip of the Navy going off. And we hired a little boat together with Victor, and then you sort of see us climbing on board of the trawler. And so that's where we're climbing on. Oh, damn it. This is when we finally meet the captain. We actually catch him in the process of trying to erase where the trawler has been, the electronic record. But we had our GPS reading, so we could prove that. We also, this is all really good fun when you see it as the, you know, not as photos, but as the action. These are our photos of the crew members. And this is the guy, I don't know if you remember, who was standing there and kind of smiling at us. You know, we then found him on board and he wasn't so smiley anymore. And then amazingly, we actually found a stolen catch, which was downstairs in the cool room. And it hadn't been transshipped yet, and that made Victor very happy. And that takes you to the end of the project. The film made a real difference because the ships, as a result of the investigation, the ships were fined. The fleet of Korean trawlers left Sierra Leonean waters because they realized the authorities were getting more serious about fining them. And we actually had reports back from Sierra Leone, which was immensely gratifying, that the catch went up. There were more fish in the water, at least for a little while, until the trawlers came back. So it was an amazing investigation to do with the result. But we also had quite good results with the interactive project. It was covered a lot in the media. We think it was the first interactive gamified investigation. When Al Jazeera got the figures in there, we're happy because 83% of the visitors on the website of this project had never been on an Al Jazeera English site before. So we had reached new audiences. We didn't do so well on engagement. People stayed on for about 3-4 minutes, which is, from what I hear, sort of fairly average for these projects, but it's really not what we wanted. But the other thing that we, of course, hadn't thought of, which was fantastic, is that we were suddenly contacted by journalism teachers who were saying, this is great, we've not had a teaching tool to teach investigative journalism in classrooms. And it's been adopted by the American Journalism Educators Association. But I've had people kind of come in from India saying, can you Skype with my classroom? So that was a really nice side effect that we hadn't, you know, in future I would try and think of that, but we hadn't. That's all the makers. Well, how am I doing for time? Are you giving? Fine. Yeah, just as a kind of, because I know this is the time of the day when everybody is tired. This is the other thing that we did. I have a friend in Sierra Leone, and she's got this extraordinary project where she's taught filmmaking to former combatants, all the guys who were young during the war and who were fighting, and a lot of them who are really living on the streets and rough. And they're the people who, if there's a future conflict, who'd be the first to go back and fight again. So she's teaching them video production and music production. So we thought, let's have a little competition. And what we did with them is we gave them all the video and we said, somebody write us a song and your reward will be, we give you a reward money, but you also get to do a music video about this. And that way we can put it out in Sierra Leone and create a little hype on radio and so on, awareness. So we had this competition, and please play. This was the result, or not? Yeah. This got quite popular in Sierra Leone. All right. And so it goes on. But it's amazing because they really, the lyrics are so spot on. They really sat down and turned all the facts from the film and into a tune. So anyway, so that's the project, really.
Amazing project, congratulations. I was just wondering, in terms of the engagement that was lacking, did you and your team have any thoughts on what you might do differently?
Yeah. I mean, the clips that we used in the film, this is actually, they're sampling Victor when he's speaking. It's so cool in the actual track when he's saying, fisheries, vessel, we want to board you. They're actually sampling that bit, which is very cool. Anyway. Yeah, I think the videos are probably too long. We have about 2.5 minutes. And I don't know, I mean, it's so difficult because you want to make it meaningful, but I think, I don't know if you all look at what AJ Plus is doing. Yeah, that sort of duration seems to work really well. And I think I would try and experiment with that. This was sort of small and cheap, but this came in the era of the back of Prison Valiant, these other big projects. And I think a lot of them were running danger of being vanity projects. My ambition now would be to do something small, cheap, replicable, still gamify investigative journalism or use gamification tools to make people understand how investigative journalism works, and have it in an app format on a mobile phone. This is obviously desktop, and I would absolutely now go and do it on a portable device. But yeah, small, replicable, that would be my goal. And then maybe, you know, after that you try one thing, then this was a bigger one, and it took quite a while to do that. Go to a smaller one, and maybe you end up somewhere in the middle in the end. But I feel it's all really trial and error just now, certainly in a media news environment.
You retest the latest version with your students and
yeah.
Evidence come out of that.
Yeah, this is anecdotal. I think Al Jazeera never quite got what we were trying to do. So they actually, it was weird, they put it up and paid it no attention and then it suddenly took off. But so we don't have proper analytics for it because they disregarded it until it started winning awards and then it actually, maybe I shouldn't, this is being recorded. So the analytics aren't that great. We have from it anecdotally. I think what was strange is that it did much better in an older age group than the younger ones that we. Well, maybe it isn't so strange to you all again.
I mean, did you go back to your
the city university?
They had time to really commit.
Yeah, sadly we didn't. I would have loved to have done that, but the course was. I mean that. So I. Put it in the, I told the tutor to distribute it to everybody who had been on the course. But I think people don't probably take the only people who write to you are the ones who like it. Nobody's going to write an email and say, oh, you still haven't improved it. It's still boring. You know, nobody did that. But sadly, the course was over. It would have been amazing to go back. And I think I really can't emphasize how important it was to get all this really critical feedback. It was a bit devastating for a day and two, but then it was a game changer.
One more question. Two more.
Just a quick one. I think I didn't say the beginning. Did you go for the hook into it? Is it that people are interested in journalism, or was it because I'd be tempted with that story to have a dramatic hook of an appeal direct to camera from the fisherman to help? Is that did you do that, or did you do it more the sort of like?
No.
Through the interest in the Al Jazeera journalist.
It was more, and that's totally possible, but we were really, I guess, as an investigative journalist, for me, it's really, my mission would be more, let's make investigative journalism more transparent and attractive. I mean, you can come at it. But one of the things that we didn't want to do is have the project become ghettoized in an environmental, with people who are environmentally interested. What we wanted to do is make investigative journalism more accessible.
Did you put any trigger in your experience in order to push the audience to keep going until the end?
That was, we had so many discussions, and I mean, really, I'm just a journalist who's come to this whole thing. I'd love to sort of hear more what people thought. We were told and sort of read that if you stop people from moving on, they drop out. So we were encouraged to allow people to scroll through even if they hadn't dragged and dropped the evidence, because there was, of course, a question of, you know, shall we just stop them? If you haven't dragged and dropped the evidence at the end of a clip, you can't go on. People told us not to do that when we asked for advice. I don't know if that was the right decision. Is that sort of your question, or?
Yeah, I sort of, because we normally put some triggers in order to keep motivating the students to keep going, you know? I mean, if they did not do something, we call them, say, you know what?
Yeah.
You did not put some kind of...
I would certainly try and do that in the next project. I mean, this is all really... It was, in some ways, it was so randomly created, because we did do the structure first, and the gamification elements, they came so late. This is, for me, the biggest thing that I've learned, and I sort of normally really try and also make a point. I don't like it to be called a game, and I really sort of talk to this a lot to the press office. I think we cannot set ourselves up in competition to the games industry, because they're just too big and have too much money. So what I would say is what we can do is use gamification elements. And that is, for me, the biggest lesson. We did this really late in the process. But that would be where I would be starting now. And I would probably do much more what you suggest early on and say, work with gamification experts from the word go and say, right, how can we put this together and integrate it?